I'm very happy to be joined today by Jan Jenisch, the CEO of Holcim, a 110-year-old Swiss-originated global leader in building materials and solutions. Jan is also the elected president of the Global Cement and Concrete Association, a member of the executive committee of the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, a CEO-led community of over 200 of the world's leading businesses committed to accelerating system transformations needed for a net zero, nature positive, and more equitable future. And finally, Jan is also an active member of the European Roundtable for Industry. Welcome, Jan, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jean-François.
So, Jan, you took the helm at Holcim in 2017 after 5 years at the head of Sika, a global leader in innovative systems and products for the building and automotive sectors. Your tenure at Sika was very successful, with an enormous amount of top and bottom line growth that led to the introduction of Sika in the SME, meaning the Swiss market index composed of the 20 largest market caps. So a very successful run.
Yes, that's correct, Jean-François. Thank you for the nice intro.
So you then joined Holcim 2 years into its merger with historical competitor Lafarge, a merger that probably proved a little bit more complex than anticipated, and we'll come back to that. And since then, which means over the last 5 years, you've led Holcim through strategic shifts and bold moves, including a number of acquisitions and divestments, resulting today in revenues of about 27 billion Swiss francs last year, 70,000 people worldwide, industry-leading ESG ratings, record profitability levels, and a stock price performance that positions you at or near the top of your industry peers. And today, the company stands as a global leader in innovative building solutions with the aim to support, and these are important words and we'll get into them, to support the development of a sustainable building industry, including through circular constructions, among other ideas. And this is an important area because buildings generate about 38%, if I understand correctly, of global CO2 emissions. So if we want the world to move more closely and more faster to a net zero, clearly we must improve the carbon footprint of constructing and operating buildings. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, it has been very demanding times, but also very exciting times. I remember when I arrived in Holcim in 2017, there was number one priority was to bring the merger to a successful end, basically to have a new operating model, make people comfortable, make sure we have the right leadership team, make sure we get a bit leaner, put a strategy in place, and most important, put the financial performance to work. We were not that successful in financial terms when I arrived, regarding cash flow, return on invested capital and all that. We still had quite a significant debt level, and we fixed all that, and nowadays we're very agile, very, I would say, aggressive group. And now our new target is to become the most innovative and sustainable building solution company in the world.
Wonderful. So first, let's start with a key question that all our listeners are going to ask themselves. Cement and concrete are materials that are inherently water consuming and carbon producing. And in a world that must reduce its carbon footprint and also needs to watch water consumption, clearly there's a question, which is why does the world continue to produce and use so much cement and concrete? What are the advantages of these materials?
Well, I think it's simply the best building material there is when it comes to performance, when it comes to cost, when it comes to design flexibility. It's earthquake resistant, it's fire resistant. It has huge advantages. And to be clear, Holcim is on the way to fully decarbonize those products. But maybe let me explain a bit the challenge we have way beyond cement, because we have the same challenge for most building materials. Is it steel, is it glass, is it insulation materials? They all have a high CO2 footprint. And as you mentioned in the beginning, building and living is 38% of our global CO2 footprint. And only 30% is the build phase, so are the materials, and 70% is the operating of the buildings, right, and the infrastructure. So everything we need on energy side, heating, cooling, and all of that. And the real solution we have to find is how do we want to build for the future? So sustainable materials, but even more important, sustainable operation. What energy source to be used, how efficient buildings have to be, how to use solar and wind at the buildings to be power producing. And that's the real system we have to develop. Right.
So please allow me to get back to this in a second. But I guess your answer is, look, those are indeed water consuming and carbon producing, but you have to understand they are probably the least bad solution we have in order to build from an environmental point of view. And also they are, as you said, very flexible, fireproof, and so on. So if the world needs to continue to produce cement and concrete, then obviously we need to do so in an increasingly carbon efficient way. Now, I know that Holcim has been working very hard at reducing the carbon footprint of these activities. Can you walk us through some of the initiatives that you have either developed or inherited and accelerated to do so?
So we can, over the next few years, we can already reduce the CO2 footprint of our products by around 50% with relatively conventional steps by using more alternative raw materials to start with, materials which are already decarbonized. We can fully equip our plants to run on alternative fuels and on renewable energies. And then we want to further reduce the amount of freshly produced cement in the final product. Right. Already today, we only need about 50% of the cement needs to be produced fresh, and 50% can be a CO2 neutral byproduct like a limestone or like construction and demolition waste. And then you go from there, because cement is not a final product, it's a pre-product for concrete, for chips and boards, for mortars, and for all sorts of building materials. And then you have to further reduce the CO2 in the products which are actually used on the construction site. So we have a huge potential, and to be honest, we have just started to do that. We just started 3 years ago to really launch decisive plans to decarbonize Holcim, to decarbonize our building solutions.
How much innovation goes into reducing this carbon footprint?
We have in at Holcim, we have the innovation is ready to be implemented. We have to make it work first from the logistics. You have to imagine in the future, we want to be construction demolition waste, a large part of our new products.
Already, so this is circular.
Circular, yeah.
Circular economy, yeah. Saying, you know, this is stuff that we already produced, yeah. We can reintegrate it.
Already today, we take more than 1,000 trucks of construction demolition waste back to our plants, to our sites. So this is 1,000 trucks of concrete, of bricks, and other materials, and they can be fully recycled 100% and no downcycle. And we literally put them back into our new products. So this is, I think, the Champions League of future buildings. And now you can imagine today we do already 1,000 trucks. Now we want to go to 2,000 to 10,000 trucks. You can imagine the logistics we need from the demolition companies to operating the recycling platforms. And we are heavily investing into that. So all this, you know, we are talking about really huge volumes, and we need to make this happen at our sites.
So one aspect is innovation, but as I'm listening to you, the other is scaling up.
Yeah.
And the scaling up is complex.
No, it's not complex, it needs to be done. You can you can imagine we suddenly need recycling centers to take in demolition waste, recycle it, and then you're gonna end up with, even you recycle, you have like 10 different grades of products. So you have to do that, you have to quality check, and then you have to bring them back. The most simple recycling goes into road construction, the more sophisticated goes into concrete, and the most highest quality recycling goes directly even into the cement. So you have to make this happen, and that's what we're doing.
This recycling sounds like a win-win, but in practice, developing greener products does not necessarily guarantee that customers will be using them and will be adopting them. Tell us about some of the challenges that you faced when you started coming up with this, you know, this greener product.
No, we have to. This is something you cannot do alone. This has all to be together, right? So we just talked about recycling. So I need to invest. I also need to partner with demolition companies. And then I have to get it approved into the building norms.
Right.
So I need the regulator to say, okay, Holcim can now use 20% demolition waste in the cement, or in the future, even 50%. So they need to be comfortable and do that testing. Maybe accelerated would be great because we have the product ready and it will just be allowed in the European Union like next year to be used.
So that's not country by country, that's European Union.
European Union. In Switzerland, we have the product already since 3 years.
Okay.
It's our biggest selling product because it's not the best possible solution to put old buildings back into new. And the Swiss approved it in the building norms 3 years ago. European Union, most likely next year. So that's one side. Then we have the customer you just mentioned. The customer needs to be aware that they can already reduce the carbon footprint. This is why we launched our green product range. So we have EcoPact for concrete, EcoPlan for cement, and they have a simple proposition, at least 30% less CO2 in those products. And to be also fair here, that's the first time we really make environment a USP for product. And that's a super success. We introduced for concrete the green range just about 2 years ago. We did it globally. And already now we have 12% of entire concrete sales with this product.
Now, this triggers a question because I was fortunate to work with Holcim but a number of years ago, and 2004 to 2010. And back then, a big discussion was how do we decommoditize the product? And I remember that there was still a lot of discussions at the time about tons. And even though that they were trying to decommoditize, there was still somewhat of a commodity mentality. How have you been able to start influencing this aspect of the culture to say, look, there are probably parts of our portfolio that are somewhat commoditized, but we're investing enormous time and energy in decommoditizing, which means we now need to think about value pricing and more margin than volume. So any comment on the cultural challenge?
No, absolutely. You hit it right, the nail on the head. That's exactly our challenge. We have to transform into making sustainability not only a must for our operations, but making it a new selling proposition for the customer, convincing everyone this is the product to buy. The same for circular. This is also a new dimension. So we are coming from this volume producer, like you described it, where we have a lot of production engineers very concerned with how many tons they produce a day.
Right.
Can they have another cost saving? So that was a bit the mindset, right? And then now suddenly we have decarbonization of the whole process, plus selling decarbonized products and making the circular work. So we have like three new dimensions, and that's quite exciting. For me, it's very exciting because we need to transform, we need to change, we need to have better marketing. We have to have different target groups. You can imagine we have to talk now to cities. Cities are the fastest to adopt green policies in their investment decisions. So we have to talk to the cities. We have to talk to big companies, which are the first one to also adopt the green procurement decisions. So to make this all work together, right? Because we need the innovation, as you said, we need the regulator to approve the products, but we need then also the customer and the influencers to support it.
Has this required a lot of retraining of your sales and marketing folks?
Yeah, it's such a thing. If you have a good engineer, a good production guy, I don't believe you should make the person a sales or marketing person, right? So what we did, we brought a few people extra in, professional marketing people, for example, to make sure that our new sales proposition for the customer is properly communicated.
Okay, so more hiring of new talent with the new capabilities than massive retraining.
It's not a lot of talent you need, but you need like two, three people to really come to a different level.
Okay. Now, you guys are going one step further, right? So you're saying on one side, we're working hard at producing cement and concrete in a more sustainable way, but we can also help the world to consume less of it through more intelligent designs of buildings. And this has led you to acquire a number of adjacent businesses and to develop a solution unit. Tell us about why and how you went about this expansion and this somewhat counterintuitive approach that says we're going to help you to use less of our products.
Well, first we have to see we need to build much more for the future. You have to see we have the growing world population. All that growth happens in the cities.
So urbanization
is a mega trend. Urbanization needs an amount of new solutions for infrastructure. We have still 1 billion people living in insufficient living conditions, right? With no access to water, no access to electricity. So we have huge demand basically from all different segment of people for their lives. And at the same time, we have to make this now sustainable, right? So we have to build more, but better with less. So we have a huge demand now to make the old buildings sustainable. So to properly insulate them, to properly upgrade the energy source, to properly put in some energy generating units like solar roofs or something like that, to put in green roofs in the cities, to help the heat burden in the cities. So we have a lot to do, and now we have to do it much smarter. So I'm not worried to sell less volume, because I'm sure I will sell more value. Okay. And this is what we try to do. And most recently with our acquisitions to enter the roofing systems. We spent about $5 billion the last 15 months to buy 3 companies in the roofing segment. And that's how we want to position Holcim closer to the customer, but also be part of the solution for more energy efficient buildings. You have to imagine the roof is, in the past 20, 30 years ago, it was not even insulated, right? It was just there to keep the rain outside, and nowadays has to be fully insulated because most of the heat or the cool air will go out through the roof, so you have to stop it. At the same time, you want a functional roof, so it has to be a green roof or has to be a solar roof or maybe a reflective cool roof to keep the building modest in hot climates. So a lot to be done, a lot of innovation. So happy we entered that segment, and that is how you see the new Holcim. We will do cement also in the future. We will decarbonize it, but we want to develop the company also to participate more into systems for buildings.
Now, when you talk systems for buildings, what coming to my mind, and maybe this is wrong and you'll correct me, is that there's also architects, designers, there's lots of other professions, maybe even cities in terms of the guidelines that they give. So it seems that there are a lot of external stakeholders that you would have to coordinate with. How is that working?
I think the granularity in building with all the architects, different cities, all the different climates you're having, different development stages in the world, that's very granular, makes it exciting, but also makes it challenging to have like one solution globally, right? So you have to be very local, and the solution you have maybe in Switzerland will not work in New York and the other way around. So you have to be very receptive to the different local situation and demands.
But it seems to me that there's also a capability issue, right, for your folks that, again, historically, somebody would say, well, I need so much of this product. And now it's what I'm hearing is now we're going to go to some of these decision makers and we're going to say, hey, actually, we could do a lot better here. We could do a lot better there. So did you have those capabilities to cooperate, or did you have to develop them? Or again, is this a case of we hired a few people?
No, I think Holcim was always close to the customer, so close to the owner, the developer, the main contractor, to the architects and civil engineers. Okay. These were always like our, how do you call it, buying center or something. But now it becomes even more important because we have this new dimension we talked about before, circular construction. And then sustainability. So these are new dimensions, and these are huge dimensions and dimensions we need to develop together. So that's why the dialogue we had in the past needs to be even more
enriched,
intense.
Yeah. And touch on more possibilities.
Yeah.
Understood. Now, along the way, you also divested a few sizable businesses, notably your activities in Brazil and in India, two countries, obviously, that are likely to engage in an enormous amount of construction over the next few years. What was the reasoning?
Well, we have so many opportunities to grow the company. As we just talked about, we need to build more, better with less in the future. So we need to prepare ourselves. And to build up a meaningful new fourth leg for the company, like with the roofing systems, we need to also free cash to be able to invest.
Okay.
So that's why we had to take the decision to divest a few countries. The countries we divest are the other emerging countries, which are, you know, rather on the beginning of the building cycles. And we want to focus more Europe, North America, where we can sell all our 4 business segments from cement to roofing systems.
So you're saying, A, I needed the cash in order to buy these other activities, and B, in those more developing economies, it is harder for me to sell this solution approach And so I'd rather focus in areas where the market is more developed.
The roofing systems we are selling now, they are top sellers in North America and in Europe. If you try to sell them in India, there's not really a market yet. Okay. There will be a market in 20 years, 30 years, but not for the foreseeable future. That's why we had to take a decision with some portfolio changes to transform meaningful, and that means, unfortunately, to let go some countries. That's, you know, actually very sad. I don't like to do that. You know, I have visited all these countries. I'm close to the teams there, and that's not the same like buying a company. Buying a company, that's a very positive thing. To divest a country is not glamorous, but needs to be done.
Yeah, and I want to ask you a tricky question, if I may. When I read about the divestment in India, I discussed it with a few colleagues. And, you know, what came through from the press release was the point that you just made. And I said, you know, wow, this is really good because this is, again, Holcim deciding to focus its resources in areas where they think they can have a really big impact. Some of my colleagues also said, yeah, but look, in India and in Brazil, they will continue to produce cement and concrete, but they will probably not be as good as Holcim at reducing the footprint of these activities. So they said, from a system perspective, from a world mm-hmm. perspective, are we losing something? Is Holcim somehow outsourcing its pollution to countries or operators that can afford to pollute more than you guys? And it's a bit of a controversial question.
No, it's not. And I can answer this. So our decision was not to divest cement. I hear that sometimes, like Holcim leaves cement or something. That is not correct. We divested emerging markets with the entire footprint. And all the other markets we stay in, we keep doing cement. So in North America, Europe, we talked about, we have the full, from the cement to the roofing systems, we have the full range. So we are just actually divesting countries, not cement. So while India was a large contributor to our cement volumes, that's correct, but that was not the reason why we did that step.
But you were, I think, the first among your peers as a company to engage in sustainability-linked financing by issuing green bonds, I think, in November 2020. Yeah. And of course, these green bonds obligate you to pay a premium to holders if you fail to meet certain CO2 targets. Again, is that helpful in this respect, that the parts that we divest are the ones that would be...
No, we run actually very sustainable operation in India, so that didn't hurt us up to now at all. Okay. I think the green bonds is just another element in the whole sustainability journey. Our promise to decarbonize is fully checked by the Science-Based Target Initiative. It's very important for me that we just not make announcements, but we have concrete roadmaps behind, and that's even checked by organizations like the Science-Based Target Initiatives. We worked with them from the beginning, and they are basically checking, approving all our action plans we are having, and that's good this way. And the bond is another, let's say, a firm promise that we are doing what we're doing. So I'm very happy to do that.
Last question on this front. Should governments, national, regional, somehow world governments, be setting somehow either more equal or more even or tighter targets to help companies like you to do well financially by doing good for the world?
I think we need a proper framework to operate. The European Union is the most advanced with their carbon certificate scheme, where the CO2 price is already priced at 80 to 100 euros. So you have to imagine that price was 4 years ago, was 7 euros, went to 20, and the last year or so went up to 100 euros. So you can imagine that helps a lot in our decarbonization. We did approve investment projects to reduce the CO2 footprint in our factories 3.5 years ago with a carbon price of 20 euros. And we kicked off 50 projects to basically reduce the CO2 by 15% in the European plants. And the payback was with 20 euros per ton of CO2. You can imagine how rich those projects are right now, and that we made actually the mistake not to have 100 projects, right? And that's with these developments in sustainability, it goes so fast, and the CO2 price shows that from 7 to 20 to 100, that you have to think ahead. And I told my guys already 3 years ago, you calculate that investment project now with 20 euros, why don't you have a scenario for 50 or 100 euros?
Right.
And that's the challenge we are having. This is such an agile thing that we have to think ahead a lot, yeah.
And of course, those are materials that don't travel so well between Asia and Europe. So when Europe has tighter regulations, it doesn't expose you to unfair competition from other parts of the world. Is that right?
So I didn't fully answer your question before. So we have a very proper system, I think, in Europe, also because the CO2 price is kind of a market mechanism. So I was always a big supporter of it. And it can even go beyond 100 euros. We are not afraid of that because it will pay off for us. Other markets of the world, that's the question, who will follow, right? We have a few provinces in Canada with a carbon price at the moment, but there is no global agreement. And we know that the Paris Agreement didn't work out a few years back. And I think that's maybe on a global scale the biggest challenge. Can we make decarbonization work with all countries? And that's I think an unanswered question. Is China, is India, other parts of the world, do they follow the Europeans? What is USA doing? Can they afford to put meaningful market mechanism in place while they already think $5 per gallon of fuel is too much or too high?
Do you have different standards and different goals in different countries? So Europe, you said we have this market, but if I go to Canada or to the US, would Holcim have different standards and different objectives? Because, again, the regulatory context is different?
And the market context is different. So we have only one policy worldwide. We want to have the most modern operation. All the decarbonization initiatives we have, we do in all our plants globally.
Okay.
But there's a difference in speed because the European Union has such a tight system in place already. And leading that this year, we will reach already 65% of our energy in the plants comes from alternative fuel. So basically, we are one of the biggest waste recyclers.
65.
That's a lot. And in the US, this is maybe only around 10%, simply because the waste is not available in the same magnitude. So also, this is a market question. We would love to have also in the US with investment programs to increase the amount of alternative fuel. But the system at the moment, they still have all these very low-cost dump sites and so on. So the system has to also develop.
Now, thank you for these comments on the macro and industry environments. As I said at the beginning, I also want to ask you one or two questions about the Lafarge-Holcim merger, which it seems now may have been more of a Holcim integrating Lafarge. But so, from the outside, it seems to have been more difficult than initially anticipated. Was it that the principals, mainly the shareholders, were a little bit overly optimistic and underestimated the difficulties? Or is it simply that, hey, look guys, this was a merger between two very large and complex organizations that were historical competitors. And you know, these mergers are inherently difficult to pull off.
Yeah, I think to be fair, you know, such a big merger and merger of equals as it was announced is a bit complex also when it comes to local approval processes to get it past the regulator. Then the leadership team has to work out and so on. So it doesn't go as fast and as easy maybe as on the paper you draft in the beginning. So, but look, we are a building material company which is very localized. So we have more than 2,300 production sites. And when I arrived in the company, I saw that the merger was excellent to strengthen our positions in those countries. And the people are, you know, on the ground, they are